Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone.
WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and welcome to our annual St. Patrick's Day show. In the studio with me, we have someone that resembles a leprechaun, but I think his name is Frank the Short, all the way here from Ireland, having kissed the Blarney Stone. So, Frank, welcome to On the Commons.
And happy St. Patrick's Day to you, Sue.
And happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone. I hope you all have a wonderful time. I know that we're going to enjoy ourselves right here in the studio. Frank, what's been going on? I know that it's been a while since you've been on, and I know that there's been a lot going on in Virginia, across the state, across the country, and all over the place.
Well, there has been an awful lot going on, and what we usually wind up talking about on the St. Patrick's Day show is the status of legislation in Virginia about homeowners associations. That has been a very hot topic this year. Some things happened, and for a change, most of the things that happened with regard to homeowners associations law are good for homeowners.
What happened? You know, last year we worked awfully hard and we lost big time. This year, maybe the answer is not to do anything. No, we did work hard, actually.
Yeah, we worked hard this year, too, and we can claim credit, I think, for at least one success that we'll talk about. I don't know that it completely makes up for the disaster last year with House Bill 516, but, you know, some of the things that that we pointed out last year have actually brought in some good. We had some people in the legislature, I think, who remembered some of the points we raised last year about House Bill 516 and why it was so bad. And although our success last year was minimal, I mean, we did persuade them to add two actual homeowners to this group of industry trade representatives they've got as the Common Interest Community Board. More about that later. But one of the things we pointed out was that the powers of the board went way beyond the stated purpose of the statute, which was to regulate managers. And although we tried to get some reining in on that front last year without success, there has been some reining in this year, and that's good. The powers of the board to take action against anybody, which could include a homeowner, apparently will soon be gone.
I wonder why it was so difficult for them to make those changes last year when we pointed them out, because you went down four times. I went down to Richmond with you three times. We brought it up time and time and time again, and they just blew us off. And now they're coming back and making these fixes a year later?
They are.
And why couldn't they have done it last year, Frank?
I'm not sure, other than last year's bill was seen as so much of a done deal. It was apparently negotiated very closely, very thoroughly with all of the with all the stakeholders, that nobody wanted to pull out a rung that might have harmed another stakeholder.
That was a pretty disastrous bill.
Yeah.
So what tweaking happened? Can you want to tell us, or?
Well, the authority of the Common Interest Community Board to take action against folks who were not managers, that was in House Bill 516, it passed last year, was narrowed, and it was narrowed in the way that we asked for it to be narrowed last year, and now the authority of that board over homeowners, or over, quote, persons, unquote, is gone. That has been scaled back, and that is a definite step in the right direction. Remember that the stated purpose of the board was to protect associations, not homeowners.
Of
course not. You can't say you want to protect homeowners, but to protect associations against unscrupulous property managers. And so
we put the unscrupulous property managers on the board to do the job, right?
Yes. And why would you say in a bill like that that this common interest community board, which is, you know, basically their hand-picked committee. You got industry representatives on it from one end to the other, and they didn't even want to add two people who actually lived in one of these associations, although we eventually prevailed on them to put that in there. Why would you put in there that this board would be able to act against people who were not property managers? It seemed to fly in the face of the stated purpose of the bill, and this year they have fixed that. So hats off to the legislature for that fix.
Any other fixes?
There was a bill, Shu, that was aimed at association salaries. And when we first noticed this bill and we first discussed it, it wasn't crystal clear what the drafter of the bill intended to do, because when the Property Owners Association Act first passed years and years ago, you were entitled to see all books and records. You will recall that an individual named Joe Grillo,
right,
out of a homeowners association or a condo association named Montebello, asked to see salary information under the authority of that Property Owners Association provision. And his homeowners association, Montebello, told him to go pound sand. Not taking no lightly, Joe Grillo took his case to court, and it wound up in the Supreme Court of Virginia, which told the Montebello Association that Mr. Grillo was entitled to salary information, and asked him, what part of all don't you understand? And Joe Grillo got his salary information. The CAI responded to that case by getting an amendment to the Property Owners Association passed, in which the term aggregate salary information was added. So you could see all books and records, including, quote, aggregate salary information, which meant that if your association had a payroll budget of $500,000, you'd simply be told, well, that's the payroll budget. Because, you see, what each of our employees makes, that's very private information. Even though we're spending your money to pay them, you don't have any right to know who's being paid what. As you'll recall, Shu, when we went to our Property Owners Association and asked for salary information under the Grillo versus Montebello case before they changed it back the other way to aggregate salary information, we first got waltzed around. And we had asked for aggregate salary information because when we asked for a copy of the management report for the auditor, we were both on the finance committee of the association in those days, we were told there's no such thing as a management report from an auditor. Why, we don't know what you're asking for.
Oh, yeah.
And we found out that there was very much such a thing as a management report from the auditor, and we eventually got it, and we also got the salaries. And what we found out, Shu, was that the auditor had recommended that our bookkeeper in our association be unceremoniously fired for incompetence. The bookkeeper, it turns out, in the audit of the year before, had not been reconciling the bank statements every month with the bank. There was no reconciliation. And so the auditing company sat down and provided on-the-spot training for this bookkeeper and squared away all the records such that they were correct, and told them, now, when we come back next year to see these things, we expect that we're not going to have this problem anymore. Well, they came back the next year, and it was as bad as it was the first year. So the auditor recommended that we get ourselves a new bookkeeper. That was what we found in the management letter. What we found in the salary information was that the association had turned around and given this gazebo a 10% raise.
Well, what the other thing that was interesting was the board never got the management report because it was delivered or it went to the treasurer's house, and it stayed in the treasurer's house or the chair of the finance committee. I'm not sure what he was at the time.
Yeah, the chair of the finance committee was asking for it with us. He didn't have it either.
He didn't have it. Well, it was in somebody's house, and you know, here's the other lesson, Frank, that we have talked about over and over and over again. Board members have just got to keep their distance from management.
Oh, yeah.
And the staff, because this guy was so involved with everybody in the office on a personal level that he sort of said, oh, gee, I didn't know that it was important, which is why I didn't turn it in.
Yeah.
And that's why the board didn't know. I mean, you know, this sort of thing happens all the time, Frank. All the time.
Yeah. I mean, the number one problem, as we've told people in our own association, we've stood up at meetings and we've said, you know, you got people on the board and they fall in love with the management company or they fall in love with the executive director. And if there's not an arm's length relationship, if this person is not seen as an employee and you start getting too tight with them, you run into these problems. And this is well before we hired the famous Coger Management Company and, you know, watched that whole debacle unfold. And it's not clear to this day how much the association ever lost because of those guys. We wound up being able to recover $6,000 that they had.
Because that was, we only audited about 4 months instead of 4 years.
Yeah, they had been hornswoggling new buyers and demanding this phonied up transfer fee that the board of directors knew nothing about and had never authorized and weren't authorized by our governing documents. This is Coger management at work.
Yeah.
And finally, after a couple of articles were written in our own newsletter in no uncertain terms, pointing out how to contact the Fairfax County Office of Consumer Protection, Mr. Coger finally saw the light and refunded $6,000.
And these are all lessons that we learned, and so these are our experiences that we kind of pass on.
Yep.
So it's not like we're all these brilliant people, but there's so many different ways that management companies, board members, staff, dare we say it, Frank, industry attorneys.
Oh, industry attorneys. Slowly I turn.
I think I said the magic words. You know?
Well, you know, we're talking about this salary bill. And for those of you who would like to check this out on the Virginia Legislature website or on a really great website that we haven't said enough good things about called Richmond Sunlight, it's House Bill 2305, and it was opposed by CAI.
You're kidding. How could they oppose something like that?
All that House Bill 2305 attempted to do was to put back into law the entitlement of a homeowner to see all of the salary information of association employees. Now, as I read the law, this wouldn't even apply if instead of having employees of the association, you had an association management company. It would only apply to association employees. So the association employs the waterboarding management company of Biloxi, and the management company says, well, we don't have any association employees. We have a contract with this management company, and what the management company pays the management company employees is up to the management company. We'd only have to turn over salaries if these guys were employees of the association, and they're not, so get lost.
So you'd still be paying for it, and you wouldn't have a way of knowing.
No,
about
not
it.
If there was one of these CAI management companies. But anyway, the initial bill was for unfettered access to all of the salary information, And that passed the House of Delegates by a vote of 98-0 on January 29th. It was sent over to the Senate, and the CAI went to the Senate with the band and the traveling show, and they lobbied very, very heavily to get the Senate to disapprove this bill. What the Senate did, instead of disapproving it, was they proposed a substitute. And what they proposed was, instead of unfettered access to all of the salary information, you would be entitled to the salary information on the top six, the six highest paid employees who earned over $75,000. So you could only get the top six, and you could only get the top six if they earned over $75,000 apiece. And after that amendment, CAI still opposed it.
Huh.
Now, who at CAI was on that list of luminaries who went to Richmond and testified about this bill?
I don't know. I know someone who lives in Richmond, almost.
Well, fortunately for us, CAI brags about this stuff.
And, they do, actually.
Oh, yeah. The CAI, Virginia Legislative Action Committee, you know, the same people who compare themselves to a pack of wolves, as we've discussed here several times before. Yes. Well, www.cai-vlac.org/legislative-alert, they put out this legislative alert. They're calling all the wolves to talk about House Bill 2305 and why the earth will open up and swallow us if this becomes law. And it says in their legislative alert that CAI members effectively voiced opposition to House Bill 2305 to the 15 members of the committee, and CAI was well represented at the committee meeting. Now, who represented CAI at the committee meeting? Well, a cat named Milton Matthews, the chief executive officer of Reston. I wonder if the good homeowners of Reston knew what Milton Matthews was up to that day. But he went down to Richmond. Also, Mr. John Bailey, the general manager of Lake of the Woods, about whom we've talked in the past.
Right.
Yes. We'll talk more about the good Mr. Bailey in a minute. Bill Maher, representing the Property Owners Association of Virginia. Mr. Maher is a CAIer, and I don't think he was speaking for any property owners, even though he calls something the Property Owners Association. Joyce Rowe, a member of the Brandermill Board of Directors, who, if I'm reading this correctly, is the only one of these five luminaries who's actually a homeowner in a homeowners association. And last but not least, Chu, Pia Trigiani, who has been on your show.
Oh, yeah. I know Pia.
Who identifies herself in this CAI blurb as a lobbyist for CAI.
She is, and so is her partner, Dave Mercer.
Yeah. Well, in addition to being a lobbyist for CAI, not to suggest that there's any conflict of interest here, Shu, what else is Pia Trigiani?
She is also chair of the new CIC board.
The Common Interest Community board that writes the regulations for homeowners associations. She's a paid CAI lobbyist.
Right.
Chairing that committee.
And she's the part owner of her own law firm that represents homeowners associations. Not the homeowners, but the associations.
Yes.
And in fact, I've got an email into her asking her for information that I have not heard back from her.
What a surprise.
Surprise, surprise. We'll have to bring her back in.
Yeah, well, I'm counting the days.
Don't underestimate me, Frank.
With regard to Mr. Bailey, who went to Richmond to testify against House Bill 2305, the salary bill, we talked about Mr. Bailey on the show back in 2007. When it came to light that Mr. Bailey was the one who, without apparently telling anybody in the association that he managed, because it certainly didn't show up in any of their newsletters, persuaded a Virginia State Senator named Senator Houck to introduce Senate Bill 1409. Remember Senate Bill 1409?
Yes, that was. Go ahead.
That was a piece of legislation that would have authorized homeowners associations who had private rent-a-cops.
Oh, yes.
To fine homeowners up to $250 for offenses or traffic offenses on association property to include, I found this one particularly hilarious, attempting to escape from a rent-a-cop.
Now, why would anybody want to escape from a rent-a-cop?
And those $250 fines, keep in mind that fines are probably unconstitutional in Virginia anyway.
They are.
And to the extent that the POA purports to allow them, they're capped at $50 per incident. This would have, you know, increased those by a level of five, and collected the fines, you see, by what other means than non-judicial foreclosure. If you don't pay the fine, you have just lost your house, all without going before any judge in any court of competent jurisdiction.
I think he must have had a crystal ball, Frank, because he knew he would have to start building up reserves and building up funds because things were going to get bad economically. So what better way than to come up with these cockamamie traffic violations? Last week I had Senator Schneider on, and they don't allow you to enforce traffic violations with radar guns in Nevada. He's got a bill in there that would prevent you from doing that. And he said because the only reason they use those is to make money for the association.
No.
Yeah. I can see you've got a look of shock and horror on your face. It never dawned on you, right?
It's revenue time, Lou. Get out there and run that radar speed trap and bring in lots of money.
The revenue collector, right.
Well, one of the things that that we pointed out to about half of the members of the House of Delegates when we opposed Senate Bill 1489 was that there might have been some ulterior motive behind what General Manager Bailey was trying to do.
No.
That General Manager Bailey of Lake of the Woods, especially since he hadn't gotten around to telling his homeowners about this, was trying to raise revenue. And we put in some information from the Lake of the Woods' own newsletter, which was called Lake Currents, about their dire financial situation,
yep.
Which just might have been motivating Mr. Bailey in his call to Senator Houck. Well, after seeing Mr. Bailey's name opposing the salary bill, I decided to go to the Lake of the Woods newsletter online and see what they might have been talking about with regard to salaries down in Lake of the Woods and why Mr. Bailey, because keep in mind, that's not a management company, Shu. These people in Lake of the Woods are actual association employees, so they will be affected by this bill. So I just kind of wondered what information might have been down there about what the payroll was. And here's what I found in the Lake Currents newsletter. It says the 2009 payroll, including all line items related to personnel pay and benefits, must be kept by management. This is the board of directors talking. At or below $2,944,695.
Petty cash.
And that this amount had been cut by $101,000 from the year before. So it's still almost $3 million. The year before it was over $3 million. And they cut it back to $299,000. $2,944,000 and change.
Maybe they can apply for some money from the stimulus fund to make up the difference.
Yes. Now, this association has 54 full-time employees.
Wow.
Applying basic math, the average salary and benefit package, the average salary and benefit package for a Lake of the Woods employee is $54,531.
And they don't want you to know that.
They don't want you to know that, but now when the governor signs this bill, you're going to be able to find out what the top six make if they make over $75,000 apiece, and my guess is they do.
WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and we are celebrating St. Patrick's Day this year with our annual Leprechaun all the way from Ireland, Frank Short. Frank, thank you so much for joining us today in the studio and bringing us up to date on what's going on in the legislature.
Well, happy St. Patrick's Day to all you homeowners out there.
So it sounds like these guys have been kissing something. I don't know if it's the Blarney Stone or...
Well, they've been down to Richmond kissing various parts of the House of Delegates posterior.
I don't think we can say that on the show, Frank.
Trying to prevent folks from finding out what employees of associations get paid.
But as you pointed out a little bit earlier, Frank, that does not include management. So this new 516 deals with just managers, and they're allowed to... write all the rules. What do you think the odds are that they're going to insist that all associations are managed by management companies? Do you foresee that coming down the pike?
I don't see a requirement that you have to have a management company, but I think what you've got already in 516, which is now law, is a requirement that you have a certified manager who, as a practical matter, is pretty much going to have to be a dues-paying CAI member. I say that because they adopted CAI, you know, the PCAM, CCAM, DCAM accreditation alphabet soup as a state-sanctioned license criteria for property managers. And in order to get those credentials, you have to pay money to CAI. At one point, it was required by the CAI Code of Ethics that you had to be a dues-paying member of CAI in order to maintain your credentials. In other words, if you were designated a PCAM, which required CAI membership, and you didn't remain a member of CAI, you resigned from CAI, under their code of ethics, you would have lost your designation. Now, I guess somebody pointed out to them that that probably wasn't the most spectacular policy position. So what CAI did was, Sue, they changed their ethics.
They changed their ethics.
They changed their ethics. One day, it was unethical to the point where you would lose your CAI credentials, not to be a member of CAI. The next day, you could still maintain your credentials without being a CAI member. Of course, if you're not a CAI member, Shu, it costs you a lot more to do all of the continuing training, you see, that you have to do, because CAI offers one rate to its members and another rate to anybody who's not a member. So to maintain your credentials, you see, you have to have all this continuing education. And if you're not a CAI member, you're paying a lot more for something that you have to have to maintain your credentials, you see. So economically, what are you going to do? At some point, you're going to say, I give up. I'm just going to I'm just going to be a CAI member because suddenly life will be a lot more inexpensive, you see. And that was the scam on that one, on their own membership or on their own credentialed, quote-unquote, industry professionals.
Well, I had a little bit of a debate with Tom Skiba, who's the chief executive officer of CAI, as you know, Frank.
Mm-hmm.
And he was absolutely appalled. He could not understand how Shu Bartholomew, who claims to be so much on the side of the homeowner, would oppose trying to get managers licensed. Well, I don't think giving money to the state and getting a piece of paper in return is protecting the homeowner. I think it's just a sham thing that's increasing the funding in the state and giving the homeowners a sense of false security. And when I said something along the lines of, well, you know, it's codified that CAI would be doing the training or, you know, would be one of the people who would offer the credentials and offer the training, and, oh, and by the way, it wouldn't hurt CAI membership at all because there's a requirement that, of course, you become a member of CAI. And he said, no, there isn't. You don't know what you're doing. Well, thank you, Frank, because you sent me a copy of the Code of Ethics. And there it was.
Certainly was.
He just didn't
deign to remember what was in that Code of Ethics there, Shu.
He didn't even answer. But what a way to hide something from him. Hide it in the Code of Ethics. He'll never know it's there.
Well, let's see this. CAI has had several problems, you see, with their code of ethics, going all the way back to their good friends at the Federal Trade Commission.
Oh, yeah.
Because the first time they got in trouble with their code of ethics, it was because they were sued for restraint of free trade. You see, they deemed it unethical for somebody who offered services as a community manager to contact a community that had a CAI manager and offer your services, sending out a brochure or whatever, saying, I'm available to manage communities. Here's my services. Here's my rates. And if you did that and you were a CAI bubba, you were unethical. And the Federal Trade Commission asked them, what part of restraint of free trade don't you gazebos understand?
That still stands, right?
Still stands. What they had to do was they had to publish in their own magazine, what was it, Common Ground or...
Right.
They had to publish the communication with the FCC, and basically that meant they had to say, I'm sorry, and we'll never do it anymore.
They haven't done it anymore, have they?
No.
Not yet. What else have you got for us, Frank?
There was a bill. Again, we talked about the bill that that narrowed the scope of what the common interest community board could do. And this bill was introduced by Senator Mary Margaret Whipple, who was one of the sponsors of House Bill 516. She was basically the sponsor of the companion bill that was introduced in the Senate. And this is Senate Bill 1143 from this year. And what I don't understand about this bill is why it was as controversial as it was. This thing was more controversial than any bill that we've seen related to homeowners associations in a long time, and we didn't go down and do any lobbying. CAI doesn't claim to have done any lobbying, although on the CAI Virginia Legislative Action Committee website, they're listed as supporting this bill. And this was a bill that was recommended by the Virginia Housing Commission. States that right on the Virginia LAC synopsis of legislation. It started off, of course, in the Senate, and it was initially referred to the Committee on General Laws and Technology, Chet Peterson's committee. And Chet Peterson is a good friend of homeowners. It passed the committee with a substitute by a vote of 8-6 with one abstention on January 28th. Then it went to the full Senate, where it failed. The vote was 20-20. The lieutenant governor, voting to break the tie, voted against the bill. It then went to the House with amendments that Senator Whipple agreed to, passed the House, passed the Senate the second time by a vote of 25-14, and then passed the House 99-0. One of the things that we have to find out is what people considered to be controversial about this bill. Because on the face of it, nothing really leaped off the page at me, and that is really the subject for another show. We probably want to talk to Chet Peterson, or maybe you can actually one of these days have a actual conversation with Pietrangiani about why this thing was perceived to be so controversial, why even with CAI support, I mean, they're usually pretty effective, it actually failed the Senate the first time around and didn't get a whopping across-the-board support the second time around.
And that is Senate Bill?
Senate Bill
1143. I don't know, Frank. And you don't see anything there? Any reason?
I didn't see anything in there that was wildly controversial. Again, you had the narrowing of the focus of the powers of the Common Interest Community Board. There was a change in the annual fee paid by owners associations. So why this thing drew as much opposition as it did is something that we have to look into some more.
And what does CAI say on their LAC thing about it?
They say support.
That's it.
That's it.
Just support the bill.
Well, now, mostly the VLAC position are support with changes, monitor, oppose, throw ourselves under a truck.
I wish they'd just do it and stop talking about it.
Support with modification, but you know that's typically what you find. But that one we'll have to come back and talk about more after we get some insight into what was really going on. Again, Shu and I did not go to Richmond this year, and had we gone down there, that would have been one of the ones worth inquiring about. But we spent a lot of time trying to work against passage of Senate Bill 1489, and that one, to our great happiness, was withdrawn by Senator Jill Vogel, who had been the sponsor, and that one is dead as a doornail.
I don't know that it is as dead as a doornail, Frank. I mean, the bill itself did not pass this year, and it's not going to amend the POA. However, I have a memo from Bob Diamond here, and I think what they're going to do, and I understand as well that at the CAI Law Seminar they talked about it, and they plan on getting that passed across the country. They don't want to put it in the POAs, in the Property Owner Association laws throughout.
Yeah, we might be looking for it there.
We'll find it there. But there's a memo, and I've got it. I've got it right here, and this is thanks to Bill Murray, who was a guest on the show, and he was pretty dynamic when he was here. But Bill somehow got his hands on, I don't know where my front page is here, but...
talking about the Bob Diamond memo?
I'm talking about the Bob Diamond memo, and the Bob Diamond memo, here we go. Here it is. It says it's to interested parties, and I don't know about you, Frank, but I'm an interested party.
I'm very interested in you.
You're an interested party, too. And he says, following the meeting of the Common Interest Community Work Group of the Virginia Housing Commission.
When is this jewel dated, by the way?
This jewel was dated July 1, 2008.
Okay.
So this is after 6016 failed.
Yep.
And which may explain why it was so easy to pull, or so easy to defeat. Because I mean, I was emailing Jill Vogel in the middle of the night, as you well know, mm-hmm. and you know we were emailing back and forth, and I'm going, Jill, the right thing to do is to pull this bloody, don't let it go. Anyway, it says the following the meeting of the Common Interest Communities Work Group of the Virginia Housing Commission in Richmond on June 26, 2008, Todd Simpkins and I, and this was written by the I is Robert Diamond, redrafted the proposed changes to the law in order to, one, solve the problems raised by the Lake Arrowhead and Dogwood 1 and 2 cases, two, address the non-congruent definitions of common interest community and development in the POA Act, created by Chapter 851 of the 2008 Acts of Assembly, formerly House Bill 516, here's our favorite one, Frank. And number three, facilitate reformation of recorded covenants when the method set forth in the covenant itself is impractical.
Impractical.
Now, let me point out that half the covenants in the country were written by Mr. Diamond himself. So my question is, Bob, why didn't you write the damn things properly in the first place instead of coming back and wanting to change it and tweak it later on?
Well, you see, it goes to what those covenants say about how they may be amended. And what they say about how they may be amended, Shu, is you have to get the homeowners to vote to change them. And in some cases where a change would seriously affect the rights of individual homeowners, you need a supermajority of homeowners to change them. In our association, we are lucky enough to have in our governing documents a cap on the rate of year-to-year increase in assessments. And that it's tied to the increase in the consumer price index. So that in periods where there's very high inflation, the board can raise the assessment rate more to keep up with inflation. But if the rate of inflation is 2 or 3%, and the board wants to raise assessments by 10% from the year before, they can't do that unless they get a vote by the homeowners. And Mr. Diamond thinks that is, what did he say, Shu? Impractical?
Yeah, he says, facilitate reformation of recorded covenants when the method set forth in the covenant itself.
Impractical.
Is impractical, Frank. Impractical.
So we call an election. The homeowners get a chance to vote. They vote no. In fact, Shu, they vote no. How many
times?
Three times. And after three votes by the homeowners telling the board of directors to go pound sand and telling them exactly where to put their proposed change to the rate of increase in assessments, the board of directors then does what? They go to a judge.
And the judge says, okay, where do I sign?
And they say, Judge, our homeowners won't vote to change the governing documents the way we want them to. And under this law that Mr. Diamond has drafted, our request to the court, the board of directors request to the court, is a sufficient basis to change the governing documents. So sign here, Judge, and we'll get rid of this pesky requirement that the homeowners have to approve a rate of increased assessments that is not tied to the consumer price index, you see. While we're at it, Judge, we'd like to do more in the way of fining people. We'd like to do more in the way of onerous towing regulations. We'd like to get rid of as many individual property rights as we can, and we know that the homeowners would never vote for that either. So how about just a top-to-bottom reformation of the governing documents of our association along the lines of a CAI fantasy movie?
Well, what's really dangerous about this, Frank, is that he says they want to add a provision to the Virginia Code, not within the Property Owners Act, Owners Association Act, and that's in parens, authorizing limited judicial reformation as follows. If a vote or consent, well, anyway, you talked about, he goes on to say that amend the first sentence of subsection 15.2F as follows, to allow another basis for a corrective amendment.
Yes.
The declarant may unilaterally execute and record a corrective amendment or supplement to the declaration to correct a mathematical mistake, an inconsistency, or a scrivener's error, correct an incorrect name of the association, or name the correct association where the declaration erroneously names the incorrect association, or clarify an ambiguity in the declaration with respect to an objectively verifiable fact, including without limitation recalculating the liability for assessments or the number of votes in the association appertaining to a lot, within 5 years after the recordation of the declaration containing or creating such mistakes, inconsistencies, errors, or ambiguities. Frank, does that mean that if you go and buy a new house and you take it subject to the recorded covenants, that within 4 years, 11 months, it is conceivable that the developer can go in and change everything, and you agree to that ahead of time?
Here's what it means. The next time you hear a CAIer tell you that, well, you signed up to this contract. This is a contract between you and the association. You see? And it's very important that when you bought your home, you signed up to this contract. The next time you hear a CAIer say that, you show them this Bob Diamond letter. You say, hey, wait a minute. What is this? What you're trying to say is the contract that I signed is not worth the paper that is printed on. That the board of directors could unilaterally go to a court and amend my contract with the association. Where's my right, Mr. Diamond, as a homeowner, to unilaterally go to a court and say, you know, I think this contract over here with my association is pretty bad. Why don't you judicially amend it for me, Judge? Where's mine? And then, just for good measure, Shu, what did we have from our old pal, Mr. Skiba, recently posted on the CAI Ungated blog? Doesn't he talk about contracts between homeowners and their associations?
Oh, yes. They'll ram it down your throat when it's convenient for them.
When it's convenient for them. So, Mr. Skiba, call your office, and by the way, call Mr. Diamond, and why don't the two of you get your friggin' story straight?
You think they ever will, Frank?
Don't know. Might be too much to expect, Shu.
You think so?
Yes.
So, Frank, what do you think? We've got about 2 minutes left, and I know that there is a ton of stuff that will be coming out of all of this. What do you think that we should be looking out for? Should we be digging in the entire code of every stupid state out there
to
find out?
Well, I think you basically tipped us off to what we need to do. In next year's legislative cycle, when they try to get this in, or even if there's an emergency session this summer. Remember last summer they had that emergency session where they tried to slip 6016 in.
Right.
And we only found out about that at the very last minute.
No, we found out about it after the fact, because I was out of the country when that happened.
But the next CAI attempted coup will be to try to get this Bob Diamond jewel of 6016 and 1429 someplace into the Code of Virginia. And so what you've got to do, fortunately, you can search the legislative website, and you can run a search on Richmond Sunlight by words. And so you go in there and you would enter the search term property. You would enter the search term association, declaration. And sooner or later, you'll find whatever they're trying to do. They won't be able to hide it. Even though there are, you know, hundreds of bills introduced, the technology is there to find what they're trying to slip in. We already know that they're not going to put it in as an amendment to the POA. Mr. Diamond told us that in his letter. So we're just going to have to look at other pieces of legislation. The other thing we've pretty much got is a list of suspects in the legislature who are either dim-witted or have accepted enough CAI campaign contribution money to introduce this thing for them. So you can search. You can search
dim-wit.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. Under D, that's what the D in DCAM stands for, I think, Shane. And finally, have we provided a Jeff Koger update on the show, Shu?
No, but we don't really have a whole lot of time, Frank. But you will have to come back.
5 years plus, folks, in the big house.
That's less than 2 years for every million that he stole.
And that's just for the embezzlement. That's not for shooting at the state troopers and the other. He's still awaiting sentencing on that one.
Frank, that's less than 2 years for every million. It's worth it.
I wonder what Velvet Jones would say about that.
Frank, thank you very
much. Always fun.
Thank you very much for joining us, and happy St. Valentine's Day, St. Patrick's Day, everybody out there. On the Commons was produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. Check out our website at onthecommons.us.